Hello and welcome. My name is Kyle, and this is How You Level Up, a podcast that decodes language to help you become your best self. The following conversation is a book review with my friends Scott and Doug. The book we review here today is called Dopamine Nation by Anna Lemke. It was a fantastic book, filled to the brim with fascinating stories and bits of scientific information. Before I share the conversation, I'd like to share a few thoughts and some quotes from the book. We all struggle in our own ways. Not everyone is willing to talk about their struggles. Not everyone wants other people to know about their struggles, because to struggle, in quotes, is embarrassing. And please let me be clear, it's not outright embarrassing. It's embarrassing in the sense that society has told us through books, TVs, and movies that we should be embarrassed. We've been educated to believe that struggling is something that only weak people do. Those who struggle aren't in the right place. They're not in the right area. They're not in the right industry, because things should come easily to those who succeed. If you're not an expert, why are you even trying? And yet, this idea in our society is changing, morphing. Slowly, the tables turn and loud voices yell into the fray, struggling is good. Struggling is natural. Lemke shares with the reader in her book that the brain processes pleasure and pain in the same place. So when we're talking about addiction, broadly defined, we're talking about the continued and compulsive consumption of a substance or behavior despite its harm to the self and or others. One of the biggest risk factors for getting addicted to anything is the ease of access. Whether this easy access is to a drug, gambling, video games, or sex, the easier it is to get, the more likely we are to try it, and if in trying it, it fills some spiritual or emotional hole, the more likely we are to get addicted to it. We all know the internet promotes compulsive overconsumption. This is not an inherent aspect of the internet. It is driven by reward systems in business. The internet provides increased access to a multitude of things, and if there is money to be made, someone will take advantage of that opportunity. How is the supply and demand of the internet of products or services stemming from the cultural reward system? Does the suggestion of new behaviors we might never have been exposed to influence our desires? We're not here to debate these questions, we're only asking them. And Anna Lemke has some interesting perspectives. She says that videos don't just go viral. They're contagious, hence the advent of the meme. Humans are social animals. And when we see others behaving in a certain way online, those behaviors seem normal because other people are doing them. Twitter is an apt name for the social media messaging platform, favored by pundits and presidents alike. We are like flocks of birds. No sooner has one of us raised a wing in flight than the entire flock of us is rising into the air. Lemke points out, people living in rich nations are most susceptible to the problems of compulsive overconsumption. They have easy access to high reward, high potency, high novelty drugs or behaviors at the same time that they lack meaningful work. This creates a dangerous nexus of addiction risk. Princeton economists Anne Case and Angus Deaton have shown that middle-aged white Americans without a college degree are dying younger than their parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents. The top three leading causes of death in this group are drug overdoses, alcohol-related liver disease, and suicide, aptly calling this phenomenon deaths of despair. And yet, not all is dark on the horizon. Philosophy has given us tools. These tools are often discarded as only for the pretentious, who think themselves better than others. I guess it's all in the delivery of the philosophy, then. Lemke calls attention to, in her book, that we need to not run from pain. We need to learn how to embrace the struggle, because all the best things come from a struggle. All the best things are born out of effort and sweat and blood. I talked about this in episode 164, Why Do We Struggle? You can check out that episode later, and if you're interested in reading Anna Lemke's book, Dopamine Nation, please take a look at the show notes. Without further ado, here's the conversation about Dopamine Nation with my two good friends, Doug and Scott.
I never told you guys about my ritual, my bodega weed ritual.
No, what was that?
So they're not that we'll like go to Mexico for, I don't know, like 3 weeks at a time sometimes. And the first night that she's gone, I buy a joint from a bodega, but they dip it in like, you know, they dip it in like the keef or whatever, the dust.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like the most potent thing. And I'll smoke the whole thing to my face and just have a panic attack in my house and like evaluate my life. And look at myself in the mirror and be like, you're a failure, you're a piece of shit, you don't do enough. Like,
I know. Oh my God.
Clean my house spotless. I like think of a million things that I need to get done. Dude, it is my favorite.
It is crazy how it does that to you. It literally does the same exact thing to me. And it doesn't need to be any, you know, keef joint, any, like literally any joint I can smoke and I will reconsider, like reevaluate everything.
Yeah. It sends me into like a dark spiral.
Do you still smoke?
It's really funny. No, like I every now and then.
Yeah.
Like, not really. No, I don't really like it. I get like that every time. Like, even if I'm at a party, I start like, oh, I gotta get out of here.
I know.
I get like anxiety.
Sometimes it's good though to have like those thoughts of like how I could be doing better. You know, am I slacking off there? Am I slacking?
Oh yeah.
You know.
That's why I do it. I like that. I like feeling afraid, but by myself. I don't want to like.
Yeah.
Panic to it or not that or whatever and be like I'm falling to shreds. No, I just go through it myself and just freak out.
Yeah,
I like it at least once every a year, you know.
How you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing well. I'm busy. I'll just start off by saying I did not finish the book. I have been working my little butt off and have not had much time to read in general. I'm probably halfway done.
Okay.
Well,
just you missed the part about radical honesty as being a key component of anyone. I mean, anyone, but yeah, she recommends just being open about everything. And in that spirit, I appreciate your honesty.
Well, perfect. I think that was the next chapter that I was supposed to read is the radical honesty. And sure. And am glad to hear that me being honest is already applying some of that because I got some ideas to share on that. But
so the book's called Dopamine Nation, and the premise of the book is it's written by a psychiatrist out of Stanford, I believe, and she's a clinical psychiatrist, so she sees patients with all sorts of disorders and addictions. But her main thing she talks about in the book is sort of how modern society has led us to a point where we're at a sort of a overconsumption, overabundance problem. For most of human history, everything has mostly been very scarce. Resources like food has been scarce. But for the first time in maybe the last, 100 years or, maybe in the last, like, let's just say 50 years or so, there's been an abundance of all sorts of things, food, media, entertainment. Now with the internet and with our phones, we have sort of a technology abundance, right? We all have very quick access to, view any video we want or scroll social media feeds. And all of these things, they affect our dopamine levels. And dopamine is a hormone in our brain that basically lights up when there's some sort of pleasure, right? We get a hit of dopamine when we scroll social media and we see something, you know, that we like. Maybe if we see someone liked our post, we get a dopamine rush. And so the premise of the book basically talks about this world that we're now in, where we have so much exposure to all sorts of very, very highly addicting, dopamine generating activities. And she mentions, you know, porn as one of them. Drugs are obviously a big one. Pain medications, alcohol, marijuana, and then phone, social media is another big one, I would say. That she doesn't touch as much on that, but she mentions it quite a bit. But yeah, I would say that's the premise of the book.
Doug, you unmuted yourself. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, I mean, this book was really great read for me personally, just because I have my own problems with addiction. And I there's one point, Scott, where she's mentioning sort of how dopamine creates paths in your brain that get reignited. Like someone that quits, let's say they're an alcoholic and they quit drinking and then they start again, they'll like drink just as much as they did because they have these sort of pathways already built into their brain from
right
or reward systems. And I can 100% attest to that being true. Like with alcohol, for example, if I don't drink, but like, okay, well, speaking from somebody that gets very addicted to things, like if I find something that like, let's say I start smoking again, if I quit, I start again, I will not just smoke, I'll like over smoke, you know? And it is sort of funny, like the amount of also going into what she was saying, like the pleasure versus pain thing, the amount of pain that happens after a while versus the pleasure that you get from it is the balance is completely lopsided after a while towards pain. And you can't, it's a weird thing. It's like so difficult to stop, even though you're in a tremendous amount of pain. So it the book really, you know, it was really interesting read for me. That's, you know, from my own personal perspective on things and in the way that I am personally, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was good.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, anything you want to talk about with the book?
Yeah. I mean, I think that for me, I try to, when I read a book, pull something that I can remember, at least one thing. Normally it's a couple of things. And if it's a really good book, I'll go revisit it numerous times. From this, the picture that constantly came out throughout each chapter of the chapters that I read was the seesaw of pain and pleasure. And that is something that I'm always going to be able to refer back to because it's such an easy thing to put in my mind of like, hey, if you're going to pile on a bunch of weights on your pleasure side, recognize that your body and brain are going to want to find an equilibrium and drop a whole bunch of weights and other, you know, processes, you know, to find some sort of balance on the pain side. And so your body is going to seek out opportunities for you to feel bad. And that means not always seeking out pleasure, because then you have your body fighting against you, always seeking out pleasure. I think that from my own experience, we have a group of friends who were, when we were young, taking a lot of drugs. And it was very hard not to take drugs, not to go to parties, not to use your fake ID to go into clubs or concerts. And addiction, I think, is something that is familiar. I don't want to say that I'm an addict, because I don't think that I need to have a thing, but I absolutely have an addictive streak in my behavioral traits. Like if I do something, I normally do it to the extreme. If I'm drinking, I don't drink a lot, but if I'm out at a club dancing, like I don't realize how much I'm drinking. I might have like 6-7 drinks and then I go home and I'm like, ooh, I'm like, I'm dizzy. This doesn't feel good. So I'm in the same boat, Doug, as you, where I don't really smoke weed anymore. Haven't in years. because if I do, I find myself either anxious or I'll be home alone and I'll be so in my head. Even if it's not anxiety, it sometimes feels like anxiety of I'm in my head, I'm thinking a lot about things that are going on in my life. But then if my partner's next to me, I want to be able to engage with them. And when I'm smoking weed, I can't.
Mm. Yeah, same. I can't engage with other humans.
Yeah.
You guys ever see, there's an interview with George Carlin where he's talking to Chris Rock. And he discusses this pain pleasure thing because Chris Rock asked him about like his drug use, and George Carlin, I guess he did a lot of coke and like LSD in the 70s and 80s. And he was telling him, he's like, you know, at the beginning, it's all pleasure, very little pain. This is an older interview too. He's like, it's all pleasure, very little pain. He's like, but after a while, he says that like it starts to switch and it becomes more all pain, very little pleasure. And he's like, you would hope that the rational mind would step in and say, hey, we need to quit this. We need to stop. But he's like, you know, it's very difficult for some people, especially if they're creative, to step in and stop themselves. And he said, you know, for me, I stopped myself. And he's like, but a lot of his peers didn't. And, you know, they died. But,
yeah,
you know, another thing too, that it gets discussed, but it still, I think, has sort of a stigma around it is like our parents or like our dads must have grown up with like access to, I'm in the airport. But like access to porn is like limited, you know, you have your imagination in a magazine. And I don't know if we understand, I mean, you know, there's a lot of research coming out about it now, but the full extent to like, I think the first time I saw like crazy porn was when I was like 11 years old in school, Like there were no blocks on the internet and some kid just was watching it. I was like, what's this all about? You know, it's like, and I think that it really, I think that that for young men had really warped, but it did make like a whole generation sort of addicts to dopamine kind of chasing a high, you know, and, because it's so crazy when you first see that and you're a small boy. It's like, anyway, that's about as much as I can say without getting overheard at the airport.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, I don't remember having that problem as a kid as much in high school or whatever. But just looking currently, I mean, it's pretty wild and insane. We've gotten to a point where any of us can, you know, with our phones or computer, search for anything we want to see sexually in terms of porn. And this book, you know, I think inspired me to at least try like the abstinence thing for a month, you know, and that could just be like getting off dating apps for a month, because dating apps cause all sorts of problems. Like phone use is pretty bad with dating apps.
Right.
So I would say this book definitely sort of inspired me to look inward and also just be honest about some of the issues I'm dealing with. I think I'm also going to try like the more painful things. Because sometimes I can get too comfortable, and I do work out very regularly, I would say, but I would say that's my one time per day usually where I'm like more uncomfortable. And I would say like trying to get more, you know, more activities that I do that are on the more on the painful side, that could be like cold showers, cold plunges, even just like waking up super early. I've never gotten to a habit where I wake up at, you know, 5 a.m., 6 a.m., whatever. So yeah, I'm going to try some things out. And, but yeah, it's definitely an ongoing issue. I would say like phone use in general is I don't know if also I'd call myself like addicted, but like pretty close. I would say it distracts me quite a lot through my day to day, whether that's social media, It could be, you know, X. I don't use Instagram that much, but these dating apps, like, so trying to deal with that. And it's really hard because everyone's like struggling with this, but yeah. Any thoughts from you guys?
Yeah. I was going to say, thanks for telling us that. Cause I think that's something that a lot, like the amount of men in particular that struggle with that, it must be wild. I forget what the number is, but that industry, well, what was it? The OnlyFans industry brought in more money than the NBA, than all the NBA players combined. Like, so it's obviously, you know, that's another Chris Rock joke that he said. He goes, he talks about, he's like, yeah, I had a problem in one of his specials. Like, I had a problem with porn. And he gets like really quiet. He's like, yeah, I got real quiet in here. He's like, it's a $9 billion industry. I'm the only one, you know?
It's like, it's actually amazing how it's sort of taboo to talk about, right? But yet it's such a huge industry. It's clearly almost, or not, I don't know what the numbers, but a lot of men have this issue.
Yeah. And I think that I think that like intimacy problems come out of that and,
yeah, totally.
You know, and I think that like, yeah, there's a lot of other issues that are coming out of that are definitely related to it, but nobody really wants to talk about it or discuss it, you know? And so they can't pinpoint it as the root of like a lot of relationship problems and stuff like that. They put it on, oh, it's not, you know, it's a monetary problem, but I think that it's really like an intimacy problem. And yeah, it does kind of warp you in the way that it does a drug addict in a way. You know, you start chasing that, and while it's painful, it's no longer pleasurable. And I think that thanks for telling us that, man. You know, I know that, believe me, you're not the only one.
Yeah.
I had never heard that statistic before, so I looked it up. It's OnlyFans creators collectively generated $6.6 billion, and the payouts for NBA players is $4.9 billion. So as a whole, OnlyFans were paid more. But of course, there are hundreds of thousands of OnlyFans, you know, content creators, whereas there's a couple hundred NBA players. Yeah, it's a very taboo subject, and it's not talked about. I think one of the things in terms of the sex industry and porn was what I had tried to do when I first started to date Leah was I stopped watching porn entirely. And before that, I was jerking off every day, every single day, looking up some porn of something somewhere online. And then when I started dating Leah, I was like, I know this is going to affect how I engage with her, and so let me try and not do it. But you hit that right on the head of it is really hard to be on social media and not to be pulled into, oh, that's actually hot, like I kind of want to jerk off right now. I like, there's crazy things on X or even Instagram, where if you go on the explore section, all of a sudden, if you look at a couple of things, you just have tits all over the place. Yeah. Like, there's no stopping it. You just click on a couple and that's it. And so I have to like consciously, deliberately, actively click on other things just to get them off my page. It is so hard.
You sent me that. It was like an adventure.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was like to cleanse your page or whatever. Dude, I swear. I was like, thank God Kyle sent me this because my explore page is insane.
And
sorry to interrupt you, but
no, that's okay. I mean, just agreement and, you know, like me too, right? These are struggles that are so hard to fight. I mean, even my daily habits of wanting to wake up and read, I can't tell you, because I'm so busy with work, I can't tell you how many mornings I'll just look at X, and my excuse to myself instead of reading is, well, I'm looking at the news. It's like, yeah, but I'm not reading it like the news. I'm reading it like a hit of dopamine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is what it is, right? It's a hit of, you know, straight to your brain, just the content that you that you want to see that will make you, you know, emotional in some ways. It's interesting. I mean, X is a tough one for me. I think we could talk about this because I think we all use it. But I do get a lot of value out of it, which is the reason I keep using it. But it is a very interesting thing to think about, which is, do the negatives outweigh the value that I'm getting? And I think it's at a point where it probably does, right? Because my feed used to be like mostly interests of mine that are very productive, like AI and technology and, you know, and writing and whatever. And now it's a lot of politics and it's a lot of news, right? And that news and politics, it does hit me because I'm very interested in it, but I'm not gaining much from learning about that kind of stuff, right? Whereas if I'm reading a book, it's just, by the way, reading really is the antidote to a lot of these problems, whether it's social media, especially social media, right? Because like reading is the one thing where you have to, like, you don't have dopamine flying at you, right? And it's like you have to just sit there and focus on this book and the words that you're reading, and it's not addicting. I mean, I guess it could be addicting, but it's like the exact opposite of a X feed where it's just the latest news clip or the latest press conference, whatever, with Trump or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I think for me, like, one of my takeaways from this book is like, try to find these activities that where I can really focus a little bit more and not have those dopamine hits, especially like in the morning, right? Where it's like there's no need for us to jump in the morning, like jump on X and like see everything that's going on. We're almost, you know, it's just too much, right? It's she talks about this a lot. Consumption. And, yeah, I guess I'll stop there. See if you guys have any thoughts.
Yeah, I sorry, Doug. I keep muting you occasionally.
Is it the jazz music behind me?
It is either the jazz music or the announcements.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
The smooth track of Kenny G. Kenny G is on the radio right now, boys. No, I was going to say, Scott, I definitely, especially the past month or so, I've been on X an absurd amount. And I'm like, 2 days ago, I was like, what am I even doing? Like, what am I doing? This is such a waste of my time. I saw a post from Naval Ravikant where he was like, the worst thing, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was basically like, the worst thing is about politics being on everybody's mind all the time is that it takes away from productive people's time. Like, people that should be spending their time productively are obsessing over, basically, I mean, if we call it what it is, like, trying to win some argument with either with yourself or with people that you're debating with for no very little gain to yourself.
Yeah.
In the end, you know, and I, you know, as someone who gets hyper obsessive or fixated on things, I found that if I give myself something difficult to do, like you're saying, like reading a book or, like playing guitar, making music, doing something that I really enjoy doing, I can almost flip or attach my like obsessive kind of personality or trait onto something that I truly enjoy doing. You know, I like for reading, it can take me a little while to get back into the habit of reading, but if I allow myself to do it long enough, I can get that obsessive quality back and attach it to that. And then I really do start getting pleasure from those things. Like, I really do.
All right.
You know, like at the beginning, if I stop reading for a little while, it's really difficult to get back into it. But after about a week of like making myself read for 30 minutes, an hour or whatever, I become like obsessed with it. So I can lock those things, lock my personality onto what I'm doing with guitar. There's sometimes I don't even realize that I've been playing for like 6 hours And Renata's like, comes in the room and she's like, hey, are you ever going to come to bed? I'm like, what time did I like look up? It's 2 o'clock in the morning or something. Like, so I think that if you, you know, I get hyper addicted to things. So, you know, I don't know if we're ever going to release it, but if anyone sort of listens to it, that's my solution to it. Like, I force myself to go to the gym, force myself to do a thing that I love. Mm-hmm. And make myself go through the difficult point of it. Like, I really don't feel like doing this at all. I'd rather scroll on my phone and rather do anything else. But once I break that wall, almost like, you know, a runner breaking that wall of resistance that you hit, the other side of that is like really pleasurable. And I feel like I'm gaining and my life is improving. So,
yeah, I think before reading this book, Scott, I would totally 100% agree with you. Like, reading is the antidote. The author, though, had brought up the perfect example of, like, the author was reading smut books and fantasy smut books, and they got addicted to, like, I need that fix of, like, the anticipation, the buildup. And then, you know, she was writing how even if the book was really shitty, I didn't care. Like, I wanted the sexual buildup and tension from the book, because it's something that, and this is why smut books are so popular right now amongst young women and even just middle-aged women. It's like, there's a tension that is created that is hard to replicate in real life if someone is really articulate and like writes beautiful stories, almost like poetry or a song. Which, by the way, I love when Leah reads smut books, because then she gets all excited and I'm like, all right, well, I didn't really have to do anything, but if you want to go hang out, let's do so.
By the way, I could be wrong, but isn't that basically is their women's version of like of porn, right?
Absolutely. Yes. A fantastic comparison.
So it's like the same kind of not totally same, because watching porn is probably doing a lot more. It's so much.
You could say damage if you. Yeah,
there's a bunch of studies where it's like women's searches for, it's all like story driven like that, you know. Yeah. And it's like, but the characters are absurd. I think I saw Jordan Peterson talking about this, where he's like, it's either billionaire, werewolf, vampire, pirate, or like villain turned good. It's all like, it's really funny.
It's interesting. They love, it's all narrative based. Like, they also, women also love like true crime, right? Like, to a much larger extent than men. And I feel like there's something to that as well.
Yeah, the violence, being near the violence but not participating in it type of thing. There are so many biological cues that we're you know, skirting the edges of and never are able to speak directly to. Of, yeah, women like true crime. Maybe, I'm not a scientist, right? I can't say, but maybe because women would watch men fight over them, right? Maybe. Who knows, right? But there's definitely also the... there's two different types of arousals. Men are very, I'm going to get this wrong now.
Is it a visual, Kyle? Like, men are very...
Men are very visual, but it's something along the lines of like, abruptly. Men can very abruptly be aroused. And women need a buildup. There's two terms for it. I'll look it up when I'm done speaking. But those two things are also a genetic type of thing of like, men need to be able to quickly become aroused, you know, drop seed and like go fight a bear maybe. And I don't think that those things happen sequentially often, if ever. But that's what the male in, you know, society back in the day before the Industrial Revolution needed to do. And then the female can go off and take care of everything else that needs to be taken care of, because the man might die.
There is something about we were talking about this in Greece. I think I asked Dana, and I was like, do you think violence is a part of love? Like, love has violence inside of it. And, you know, like, on the surface, it's kind of a provocative question, because it's like, you know, I'm asking a girl, like, do you think that love has violence in it? But, you know, and immediately your head kind of goes to sort of like abusive people. But I don't mean that. I mean that your ability to be extremely violent as a man is like a protective quality. Like for me, I kind of answered my own question, which is I think that violence is a part of love, a tremendous part of love, because if someone you love is being hurt or in danger, you have to have the propensity to be violent in a way. And I think that that is sort of where it would be linked to. I don't, you know, I'm not, I haven't studied this or anything, but
yeah,
there is sort of like a controlled violence or a controlled aggression that, you know, could be why. It is a great mystery why women are obsessed with true crime. Like, it really creeps me out a lot, to be honest.
Yeah, it is.
It's like, dude, you're listening to a serial, like, what about women that send letters to serial killers in prison, like fan letters? It's so crazy.
I looked it up. It's spontaneous desire. So it's often associated more with men, right? It's just associated more. It doesn't mean that women can't have spontaneous desire. It's often associated with men, and it is an arousal that arises out of nowhere without any seeming trigger or context. Of course, we know, I mean, we can point to, hey, if you're on a dating app looking at very attractive women, that's the trigger, right? It's just really quick. You're looking at attractive women and all of a sudden, boom, you're like wanting to mate. Whereas a woman is more often associated with responsive desire. And this is emerging from sexual stimulation, the context of arousal, right? Maybe a date night, it takes longer to build. And these two things are, they don't always match up too, right? Which is, you look at older generations and you're like, how did you lose your love? How did you lose the ability to be affectionate with each other perhaps? And it's like, well, it's always work. Every little piece of our life is work. And sorry, I'm going to go off on a tangent here. I've been thinking recently more about the character Sisyphus in Greek mythology, where he's rolling that boulder uphill. And I'm doing a little bit more reading into the story itself, but the theme of it is life is about working constantly, unendingly, until you die. And it's just, what are you going to work on?
Mm. Yeah, that's Albert Camus' great observation, that life is just sort of this fight, this unending fight to roll like an impossible rock up a hill, and then it rolls back on you. You have to go back. And then it's really great. And he's kind of, I'm not spoiler alert, I mean, it's a philosophy book. So there's, you know, it's not like this is the whole point of the book, but he goes through the whole story. But he says that you have to imagine Sisyphus happy. Like, if you could do that, if you could imagine him like happy with his lot, that he has to just push this rock up the hill every day. And that's sort of like a philosophical victory that you can win. I do agree with you that, yeah, life is like these sequential actions that you have to take over and over again. And sometimes they're as, you know, sometimes they get easier and sometimes they just rear their head and they become more and more difficult, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say, Scotty, just really quick, by the way, this toothpick that I'm chewing on, it's a cinnamon toothpick. And I bought these because I have a mouth fixation. I have an addiction with my mouth, which is why I love smoking. I love putting something in my mouth and chewing on it, pulling on it. And a cinnamon toothpick helps you stop smoking.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's how my grandfather quit.
Really? I never heard of that. Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm trying to think of, you know, any other takeaways from the book that we can try to, you know, enact ourselves. I think for me is, you know, not shying away from the painful things as much. And just, you know, I've always wanted to develop a habit where I, you know, wake up super early. I just need to try and reinforce the fact that yes, it's painful, but it gets me to a pleasure state eventually, right? I just need some patience. Another thing the abstinence thing is like worth trying, right? It's like 1 month of not, you know, no, 1 month is not going to kill you. If any, it could be any habit, any activity, like 1 month away from it is just worth, it's worth a shot, right? Just to see how you feel after not engaging in that thing for a month. For me, it could be, you know, maybe off X for a month, right? Or off my, these dating apps, or even no, like jerking off for a month. Like that could be pretty hard.
It's a hard thing to do.
Right. And I'm sure worth it, man. Hard for, like, you know, the first week is probably really hard. First 2 weeks, maybe. And then it probably is like, all right, this is like a little bit of a new normal. It's just like those urges are very strong. And at first, right. And those, whenever you're trying to stop something, and then eventually it dies down a little bit. And then also just like, you know, this is a good start, but like just being more honest about issues I'm going through with my friends, my family, people around me, trying to work on, I mean, you know, it's, she calls it radical honesty, but yeah, that's kind of what it is. Just like being an open book about things that are going on would do me a lot of good. I think it'd just be more comfortable in my own skin. And so I would say those are a few of my main takeaways.
Yeah. I think that radical honesty thing, you know, I had some trouble. She speaks about like depression at a point and this feeling of like, you're not radically honest, or you don't tell people like the truth about yourself, that you feel like you're almost wearing a mask of yourself, you know, and you're wearing like a construct of yourself. And, it does sort of feel like after a point, if you do that for too long and you're not honest about what you feel, what you think, and exactly who you are with your friends and with your family, that it feels like the inner you that is kind of gets so really like disgusted by the facade that you created, you know, that you can't even live up to because it's like an impossible standard, and you get depressed from it. I've definitely had that happen. That was one of my the things that resonated the most for me with this book. Yeah, I really enjoyed it, Scott. I thought it was a great pick.
An excellent pick.
Thank you. Yeah, I was skeptical at first. I didn't know much about it other than I had like heard about it in passing. But, you know, psychiatry is an interesting field, and it's like, I was glad that the way she, like one thing I was glad in her approach was like, she shied away from just like talking about medications. Right. And she really, I thought, did a good job of like, saying, okay, these medications are like being way overprescribed and is not like the answer to a lot of these problems. Unless of course you're like severely depressed or something. Right. Then of course you should take them. But I kind of liked her approach. I thought it was interesting how she talked about AA a lot, especially towards the end of the book. Was, you know, clearly she saw the value in a program like AA. I think her point was like, AA is, you know, some sort of community like an AA, because AA, they get you to reveal everything you're going through and like speak about all your problems. And like, that's so important in, you know, according to her, where it's like this approach of radical honesty, and then like the shameful approach she talks about at the end, where it's like AA is a community where you can discuss things without them being destructively shameful. They won't obviously kick you out of the group for talking about your struggles. And that's sort of similar with you guys with this conversation here, right? Like, I'm glad we can chat about this stuff because we all know we're not going to be like destructively shameful about anything we talk about. So yeah, I enjoyed the book as well. It was good. A lot of the studies she talks about, I'm like, all right, are these like a little outdated? Like, she mentioned the marshmallow experiment a bunch of times. I'm pretty sure that experiment is like, has been retracted, but
interesting.
I'm not sure about that. Well, I mean, you guys have heard the thing about like almost half of the studies aren't, you can't like the replication crisis. Have you heard about this?
Yes.
Like, yeah, there's a huge problem. It's like most of these studies you can't replicate, especially I think in the field of psychology and psychiatry. Yeah, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. It's a little, it's a modern book, right? It's like only a couple of years old. So, in some ways that's a good thing. And in others, like it's not, because it may not stand the test of time. We'll see. But I thought it was good, sort of highlighting the major problems that people are going through now in this world of just like high dopamine. Everything is being like designed in such a way that people are becoming addicted to these apps, social media, porn. It's all like really messing with us. So I thought it was good.
Being radically honest, can I tell you guys something I think when I see, because I was thinking the other day, like, yeah, I'm on my phone way too much. I had the same problem with Twitter, Scott. Yeah. But I was, sometimes when I see people addicted to their like phone and on the phone all the time, all I think in my head is like, now's the time to get ahead, put my head down and get to work. I'll be at all pace, everyone.
Yep.
You know, I've been thinking that a lot lately. Like, wow, if I could just dig in and get off my phone.
Or it's always great when you're like on the subway and you see everyone on their phones, but then there's like one guy like reading a book and you're just like, all right, I wish I was that guy right now.
Yeah. It's a good time to become aware of that. Dude, I'm finally boarding. I can't believe it. I've been in the airport for like 4.5 hours.
Yikes. I'm glad you're boarding. Before you board or while you're boarding, who is picking the next book?
You are, no? You're in the rotation. It's you.
Okay. All right. Well,
you don't want to reread the Anglo-American Establishment, Kyle?
Fuck no.
By the way, that book is the template for everything we're seeing with USAID. Like, we need to talk about that at some point. It can be like a quick convo, but
it can be. I actually already recorded something for it. Just general thoughts on my own.
Scott, you should be on that too, because it's that book is so boring. I mean, it's probably easily one of the worst books I've ever read in my entire life. But it what he details is sort of the structure that like these NGOs and colleges why their ideologies are geared a certain way and why they're built that way. And he does it by like just naming the names of Cecil Rhodes and like the entire United Kingdom sort of colonial quest, basically. It's a crazy book, but
yeah,
it's so boring. It's like reading, you know, it's like reading a list of names, basically. But so there's like glimpses in it.
Luckily we have Mike Benz to dissect everything.
Yeah.
We can have a conversation about that then. We just need to schedule it, because we have been having a tough time scheduling these. I think all three of us have now at one point or another delayed, and so it's just selecting a date and then sticking to it.
What are you thinking for next book, Kyle?
I haven't decided. Would we be okay with possibly a fiction book?
Ooh.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd be okay with it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna try and find one that's not super thick.
Yeah, not super thick, and up to you, of course. But I've really been wanting, and I'm sure you guys agree, but like, there's so many cool like sci-fi books that I haven't read that I would love to get more into, but totally up to you. I just think there's so many classics like around sci-fi. Yep. Like I still haven't read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, like books like that.
Mm.
That's a great book.
Yeah.
Doug, have you read it?
Yeah, I've read it. I'll read it again though. It's so good.
All right, I'm going to try and pick one that all of us haven't read, so it's fresh and clean.
Okay, cool.
All right. Well, gentlemen, much love. Great conversation. And I hope you all have a wonderful night.
You too. Yeah.
Love you guys. I'll talk to you soon. Later.
Thank you for listening to How You Level Up. If you're enjoying the show, subscribe and give a 5-star rating. There are new episodes each month asking questions about timeless communication lessons. Language is a medium for sharing, and the knowledge unpacked here can be applied to anyone, anywhere, facing any challenge. If there's a question or topic you'd like me to dive into next, send a note to any of my connected social media accounts. This is all about how you level up.